Just say it. Just fucking say it.
Don't you swear at me, you shit. Don't you ever raise your voice at me. I am your mother. You understand?
Come on, Peter. Let's just sue it.
It's heartening to see so many strange new faces here today. I know my mom would be very touched and probably a little suspicious. My mother was a very secretive and private woman. It's Grandma. You know you were her favorite, right? Even when you were a little baby, she wouldn't let me feed you because she needed to feed you. She was a very difficult woman, which maybe explains me.
I recognize you from your mother.
What? Sometimes I swear I can feel them in the room.
Oh my God, what's that?
She isn't gone.
She had private rituals, private friends.
Who's gonna take care of me?
You don't think I'm gonna take care of you?
But when you die.
She wasn't altogether there. At the end.
Dad, I don't like this.
What's happening?
Peter!
Don't you ever raise your voice at me. I am your mother.
Wait, stop.
Mom, what's happening?
Make it stop. Make it stop.
I just don't want to put any more stress on my family.
Welcome to Bela Lugosi is Undead. I'm AJ.
And I'm Suki Ryan.
And we're going to go ahead and talk about one of our favorite films of all time. Really the first film we ever podcasted about, right?
Yes, I think it was, like, way back in the OG podcast. For sure.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and talk about Hereditary, 2018 film from Ari Aster, starring Toni Collette, Millie Shapiro, Gabriel Byrne, Alex Wolff, and Dowd, super dope cast, super dope mm-hmm. film, and just, like, all around horrifying.
Yes.
Yeah, Ryan, what was the circumstances in which you saw Hereditary?
I'm gonna be honest, like, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, actually, I was telling AJ before we started recording, I've seen this movie, like, 10 times, and I don't rewatch movies. Anyone that wants to sit down and watch horror movies with me, I make them watch Hereditary. Anyone I've ever dated, I make them watch Hereditary. Like, so this is like the cornerstone of my horror movie film. So basically, I saw the preview and I was like, oh my God, that movie's going to be so silly. And then AJ's like saw the preview and he's like the eternal optimist. And he's like, no, dude, it looks fucking dope. Like, and I was like, okay, fine. Like, I'll give it a shot. And I went in. And, like, this horror movie is a theater horror movie. You'll never be able to, like, hopefully maybe they'll do, like, minor releases or something because it's so good. But the theater experience was amazing. What they did with the sound effects, with the tongue clicks and yes. the scribbling. Like, as you're watching the movie, there's a scene where there's, like, the ghost or the demon is, like, scribbling behind your head. And only the speaker's behind you, and you feel like it's, like, right behind you. It was just such an amazing experience to watch this movie, and I was, like, instantly in love. And once we go through the plot, like, as a mental health practitioner, like, this movie is, like, a perfect depiction of, like, a grieving family, and then all of a sudden, it's, like, witchy and horrifying.
Well, and there's a couple things to touch on. So first of all, I 100% agree with you that being in the theater for this movie remains one of my all-time favorite experiences. For any movie I've ever seen, and I've seen, you know, hundreds of movies, thousands of movies in theaters.
Probably
and,
thousands.
Yeah. And Hereditary, the night that I saw it was the opening night. It was the Thursday night midnight showing. I saw it at Universal Studios. I saw it at City Walk. with a couple of my friends from work, because at the time I was working at Universal. And yeah. we walked in, and we saw this movie, and the theater, everybody was, like, aware of what they were kind of about to see. But yeah. when there's, like, the certain turns in the movie, the whole thing just completely upended everybody's expectation. And
oh, yeah.
I just remember sitting there thinking when the big, like, thing happens at the end of the first act, like, yeah. the exclamation point at the end of what I would consider act one, I was just like, where do we go? Like, where does this movie yeah. go from here? And yeah. the theater reacted the same way. It was just like, oh, my God. And it's I just remember how scary it was. I remember yeah. people – you couldn't tell what the clicks were, whether they were in the movie or at a certain point. I think people started trying to screw with their friends and do it. And it worked every time. It worked every yeah. time. And I don't think I've ever seen a single moment that, like – I guess, like – washed over a crowd yeah. like in the final like 10 minutes the yeah. shot when Alex Wolff wakes up in the bed and there's something in the corner of the room and when yes. when it just like when people start to realize that Toni Collette
I'm getting goosebumps right now
yeah like, when Toni Collette is up in the corner of that room yeah. it was like you could hear people realizing she was there like throughout the crowd slowly and it was yeah. so horrifying and I think that's the thing. Part of what I love about Hereditary is that it is such an uncompromising film. I think it's one of the top 20 horror films ever made. Like, today, oh. we can go ahead and mail that into the Hall of Fame, right?
Yes, yes. Easily in the Hall of Fame as a horror movie. And I don't know for age, I don't know if we're talking about, like, the scenes yet or not, but, like, when that first act punctuation point, like, I was like, they're not going to show it. They're not going to show it. Like, they're
and then they do.
Not going to show it. And then they fucking show it, and you're like, oh my God, that's... I in the movie, I was like, what? Like, I can't believe they did that. Like...
and so, I mean, we don't really need to beat around the bush about it, because right. I think that Hereditary, now being almost 5 years old,
yeah.
people who are interested in this movie have likely already seen it, and other people yes. are probably too scared out of their dang minds to even, like, get past the first half hour.
Yeah.
When they show Charlie's head on the freaking yeah. side of the road covered in ants.
Oh my God. Covered in ants.
It's one of the most disturbing single images in any movie I've ever seen, period. Like,
it
like,
is like burned. I see it in my head. It's like burned into your mind. Because, like, there's like. Because, like, what they do, what he does so well is he attaches you to the trauma of that incident where, like, Toni Collette comes out and she's like. All right, I'm going out. I'm going to start my normal day. I'll see you later. Like, and she just goes into the car and is, like, horrified and, like, grieving. And you can, like, she does such a good job of, like, showing true, like, absolute depth of grief, right?
100%.
And, like, some people are like, and she's like, oh, she overacts too much. And I'm like, what? No, this is what, like, that situation, this is like a mother. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. this is exactly how a mother would react in these situations. And so you feel in that movie, those mirror neurons go off, and you feel that pain. And then all of a sudden, they're like, no, bitch, this is a horror movie. Like...
yeah, no, it is, I think, and I think the easiest way to go ahead and just talk about it is when Ari Aster was going around pitching the movie, he said... it was a family tragedy that curdles into a nightmare. And I think that is the perfect description of this movie, is they force you to sit in the worst possible thing that could happen to a family, that one child indirectly causes the death of the other child in such a – in the most horrific way possible.
Right. Horrific, traumatic, like, event in a family.
And that would destroy most families. There are so many movies in film history that are about this very thing that, like, I think a great example is Ordinary People. It won Best Picture in the 1980s. It beat Raging Bull. It's about a son survives essentially a drowning while the other son dies. And the family can't live with it, and it destroys the family over time. And that is what Hereditary is at its heart. Is a movie about a family where one child kills the other child, and how do you move on? Except the thing that Ari Aster adds on to it is a Rosemary's Baby cult is trying to bring the devil back. It's trying to bring, like, one of the kings of hell.
Okay, hold on. We gotta do our 90-second bit, because, like, we gotta start talking about this movie, so...
Great point.
I picked the movie.
Let's go ahead and do it. Okay, so, Ryan, do you think you can give a 90-second plot description of Hereditary?
It'll be extremely challenging, but I will do my best. Okay. All right, give me the timer.
All right, give me... Whenever you're ready to go.
Okay, ready, set, go. So the movie opens up, and it is the Toni Collette's mother's funeral, and there's clearly some sort of strange relationship. She describes that, you know, she had a weird relationship with her sons and her husband and this, and there's so many people at this funeral. And then she goes on, and they're living their normal lives, and the son, he wants to go to this party because the girl he has a crush on will be at the party, goes to the party, he starts to get high. His little sister has a peanut allergy. They go out and they start to, she's like, go eat this cake. She eats the cake and she starts having an allergic reaction and she can't breathe. And they're driving down the road and all of a sudden they hit a pole and it pops her head off. Toni Collette comes out and the son drives home. And Toni Collette comes out, sees this like horrifying scene. They are grieving. Mother can't forgive the son. There's all this weird witchy stuff going on. This woman comes out and she starts to show her that she went to a seance and had this, like, she can talk to her son. She gives these Latin words to read, never read Latin words. And then she goes out and, like, has this, like, whole seance. And all of a sudden it just seems like that the Toni Collette is being, like, possessed or something. And she's, and her, you know, the husband gets... Ah, Tim Rose is murdered, goes out, Toni Collette cuts off her head, and now we have three dead matriarchs in the family, and Charlie is now in the body of, I forget the name of the son, and then you can tell because he has the same affects, and he does the tongue click, and they all yell, hail Payman. Payman is now in the body of the son.
All right, so you went over by, like,
that was not
seconds.
A very good job.
That's okay, but that, honestly, like... I think it was a pretty good job, first of all, considering how much ground there is to cover in this movie. Yeah, you went over by like 15 seconds, but I think we can all live with that, because sure. You did get really into the details on it, and yes, and this is a cult movie, and it's a family tragedy, and it's all of these things at once. And,
oh my god, it's so much going on, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why it is ultimately a fairly rewatchable film, because...
Oh, yeah. There's so many... pieces that show up. So the reason I bring up the funeral, the people in the funeral are part of the cult. Mm-hmm. The people in the grief group that she goes to are part of the cult. Like,
yeah, it is a total, like, you want to be suspicious of everybody on screen every time you see the movie after that first time, but it is still so absurd to think that these family members are all being controlled in some way. And You're like, no, these are people who have total control over their life and their bodies and their future, and they don't. They are doomed to walk this path where they are all going to die in the most horrific ways possible.
Right. Yeah, and I guess, like, bringing, like, magic into it, like, magic with a K, like, the idea of magic is that you can change the will and the forces around you to be able to create your own reality,
mm-hmm.
right? And Ari Aster understands that, like, quote-unquote magic, and this movie is about not only about, like, demons and grief, and also there's this other piece of, like, fatalism versus free will, right?
Yeah.
And how this cult has created a fatalistic experience so that they can summon a demon. Like,
yeah. And there's also something else to be said that even if you just take this movie metaphorically, that it is a movie about the things we inherit from our parents and the literal – in this case, that he literalizes the demons. But I mean, as somebody who is the son of an alcoholic, of somebody who has seen that in his family, you know, these are things that I have to worry about in my life.
Yeah.
And depression and bipolar disorder are things that get passed down between – families. You literally inherit these things, and so the way that Aster plays it, a lot of the movie could be seen as this family having just simple mental health issues that they are not addressing, And yeah, you no, could I... read the whole movie that way, because Toni Collette's father also had some crazy, right. like, he starved himself to death, and yes.
her brother committed suicide, right. saying that, like, her mother was putting demons in him, you know?
and all these things sound like mental health issues that a family continues yes. to leave unaddressed. And Absolutely. Then Ari Aster's like, maybe, but also...
But also, demons are real.
But also, the grandmother is... What is it? It's Queen Lee? Yeah. Queen yeah, Lee, she's yeah. the leader of a coven. yeah, there's like, yeah, hey, Payman, we're going to give him yeah. a body.
But that is the metaphor, right? Like, hereditary, that generational trauma, like, mm-hmm. the generational trauma is, it's like, it's not, like, hard set in stone, but theoretically lasts for three generations, right?
Exactly.
And so you have, like, this three generations of you know, generational trauma. We have the grandmother, mm-hmm. the mother, and the daughter all beheaded, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it's, like, just such a, like, there's so many layers to this movie. We try to keep it concise, so.
Yeah. So, some of the things to just kind of keep in mind. So, Ari Aster, who comes out of this movie, this is his directorial debut of a feature film. The movie wow. premiered at Sundance Film Festival and was just a wild, like, raucous crowd. And then later wow. played at South by Southwest, same deal. So there were rumors within the horror community that this was, like, the one for everybody to watch out for. So when Ryan yeah. was saying AJ watched the trailer and said, yo, this is going to be a real one, go see this movie, I'd yeah. already heard these rumblings that yeah. this was, like, the horror movie of the year. And so I'm not going to pretend that I had some insight based on some trailer. It was definitely the rumblings of this movie playing out just blowing the roof off of festivals is what I had heard and why I thought this was, like, one we had to watch.
Yeah, which, like, I'm so glad the trailer did what it did, because there's so many horror movies out there that are like, this is what the movie's about. Here's the jump scares. Like, you know what I mean? And, like, you had no idea what Hereditary was about from the trailer. You had literally no idea.
Exactly. and like, when you start to hear of Ari Aster's influences, it kind of makes more sense. So mm-hmm. he had written 9 features after he graduated AFI Film School in uh-huh. 2010. Nothing had gone. He worked wow. for 7 years trying to get a movie made. Nothing would wow. go. He made a couple wow. shorts. They caught some attention. But it was ultimately Hereditary that ends up becoming his first movie to go. And yeah. he said in interviews that he was, frankly, a little skeptical he would ever get a movie made. And wow. specifically, oh. like he chose he chose horror because he knew it was a way for him to get a movie made. He said it was a somewhat yeah. cynical choice to begin with. But then yeah. he sat down, he thought about all of the movies that he loved. And yeah. tried to bring them to life. So he wanted to bring them to life, as he put it, a Mike Lee movie, yeah. which Mike Lee writes, like, horrifically sad family dramas. Like, okay. they're amazingly great movies, but they are sure. just rip-your-heart-out movies. And then he also wanted to have his influences Don't Look Now, Rosemary's Baby, Psycho, yeah. and Night of the Hunter. Yeah. And if you've seen any of those 4 movies, the influence is obvious.
Yes.
Psycho in particular...
Like...
yeah, Rosemary's Baby stands out the most. Psycho, mm-hmm. obviously, you completely upend the entire movie at one point.
Yes.
And then Don't Look Now. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Ryan. It is about a family. It is about a family who has to deal with a daughter who drowns in a lake.
Oh.
And yeah. about the husband and wife and how they're trying to move forward. So the influences are very, very obvious.
I'm, like, tearing up hearing all this, because I'm, like, but talking about that, like, Ari Aster, the piece, it, like, hurts my stomach. Like, I feel, like, this sadness in my stomach that, like, he may not have made horror movies. Like, we need Ari Aster in the horror community. Like, his movies sure. are just so good. Like, mm-hmm. but it makes me, it's so cool that, like, he tried so hard, and horror is an entry for so many great directors to be able to come out and make these movies. Like, I love that about our community.
Yeah, I think Aster's a great example of the trend that has started between Get Out in 2017 all the way to today, right. where we have, you know, Jordan Peele breaks through in horror, and you have Ari Aster breaks through in horror, and you have Robert Eggers breaks through in horror, and yeah. you have John Krasinski breaks through in horror. Right. I would say, honestly, the transit of the station at this point, there are some directors that are just now trying to get into it that I'm like, okay, yeah. you missed the train like 10 minutes ago.
You're trying too hard, bro. Like,
yeah, maybe it's a little too cynical at this point. But there was this, this stretch from 2017 to 2020 where it felt like every few months we were having another great director like emerge because of their horror movie that they made, that they finally got to make.
Okay, where do we go from here, Age?
Well, let's see. Okay, so one of the other things that I think really stands out about Hereditary, and I think part of the reason why it is so rewatchable, is because of how immaculate the craft in the movie is. Beyond all of the great relationships that are on screen, you have this like incredible world that Astor builds.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of it is with the production designer. The production designer honestly had to make, according to Astor, had to go out. He had to build all the sets. He then also had to build all the miniatures for all of the sets.
Oh, God.
And they had to match. So it was like this crazy scenario where they're going back and forth and back and forth.
Right.
Having to create all that stuff. It just seems like a nightmare. The actual outside of the house was a real house, but the insides of all of the houses, and as well as the tree houses, were all built on sets. Yeah, they're all built on sets.
The way they film it, it has to be. How do you, like, pan from one room to another? Like,
right. They literally had to, like, pull apart the sets, and, like, that way the camera could go in and out in between rooms and stuff like that, and help set up, like, the chase scenes and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Some of the ones, so coming in here, the scene where, like, it's behind you, they're scribbling, and, like, it's a strange shot where, like, it pans with the person walking, but from overhead. It's like almost from, like, the audience's view. Like, that was such a cool, innovative shot that, like, I don't think people really talk about. Do you know the scene I'm talking about?
Yeah, 100%. And then there's also the scene where, I mean, frankly, the first shot of the movie starts on the outside of the dollhouse and slowly zooms into the dollhouse. And then all of a sudden we're in the movie. Huge shout out to Grace Yoon, who does all the production design, and Richard T. Olsen, who did all the art direction. The two of them, like, insane. Absolutely insanely good stuff.
Right.
And then also, you have to shout out Paolo Porgeschi. I totally just butchered his name. He's the DP, the cinematographer. He has gone on to shoot some, like, great stuff, in addition to Midsommar, and he directed Nobody. He's somebody who we should all be keeping an eye on. He's probably gonna get some Oscar nominations in the near future.
We're gonna have to, like, give Midsommar a little breathing room from that, so we can't do back-to-back Ari Aster, but that's another fantastic movie.
Exactly. So it's just a really strong crew that works together and just, like, got his vision. And as Aster is putting it, he basically went through the shot list in his head. He had every, like, shot already in his mind. And then over 3 weeks, he sat down with the cinematographer, with Powell, and with the set designers, Grace, and they went through for 5 hours a day going through the sets. What's even cooler is he didn't show them horror movies as reference. He showed them, like, non-horror, more, like, relatable movies, like the Mike Lee movies. And In the Bedroom is another big one that he referenced, which also has, like, a first act tragedy that then the rest of the movie has to live with. And that movie also got nominated for Best Picture. A lot of the movies that he's drawing from are Best Picture nominees and winners for a reason. And the fact that Hereditary is not one is actually still to this day one of the things that makes me angriest about the Academy Awards. I know I know that they don't respect horror. And as somebody who has covered the Oscars extensively, I didn't expect them to. But the fact that this movie got so ignored is just still to this day just absolutely mind blowing.
Right. Like, this is like legitimate. There's a difference between movies and cinema. Like, like, this is like a movie. Like, this is a movie about grief and trauma, and then it's a horror movie, right? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like a horror movie that has some grief and trauma. Like, this is like a real movie. Of that has, like, real people in it. You know what I mean? Like,
100%.
So it's just, yeah, I really, that's really frustrating that, like, it didn't even get, like, nominated for anything or even considered for anything, you know?
I mean, luckily, there were places where it was able to get nominations. So first of all, I'm going to go ahead and plug our own website, webottablog.com. I was all over this movie when the film released.
Yeah.
Just absolutely loved it. Let me see how many awards I ended up giving it. I know for a fact that I nominated all over the place. Tony Collette is my personal winner in lead actress.
Oh, yeah.
Noah Shapiro, who plays the little girl, who plays Charlie, she is in my supporting actress nominees.
Wow. Yeah.
The other thing about Millie Shapiro is that they took her off of – this is her first film role, but she had previously won a Tony. She was one of the girls who played Matilda in Matilda the Musical on Broadway. But because they used children, they cast multiple people. And so she was part of a rotation of four girls, but they won the Tony as a collective group.
Wow. So, oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's incredible. She's, like, talented. Like.
Yeah. As I put it, she's got her own corner in the Creepy Kids Hall of Fame. I mean, it is just so unsettling.
She is probably the creepiest of creepy kids.
I mean, seriously, it's not even a question to me. Like, it is so... She's so good in this movie, and it's why you get so sucked into her immediately. Like, oh, there's something wrong with this girl when she, like, cuts off the dove's head, when she says the line about who's going to take care of me when you're dead is so upsetting. Even after she passes, when you see her standing in the corner of the room one time, just the way she is standing is so depressing and sad and upsetting.
Yes.
It is just unreal. Now, I think the other thing is Toni Collette. I think that she gives this all-time performance.
Oh my god, she killed it.
That is just, like, otherworldly. That year, she led critics groups in wins. So even though critics around the country were just like, take it. Take all of our awards. You can take all of them. She won more than 20 awards for Best Actress that year. And that's why I get so frustrated with the Oscars being like, nah, we good.
Who won that year?
The actress who ends up winning was actually my runner-up was Olivia Colman. So I can't say it was a bad win, that who they ended up giving it to. It seemed like it was going to be Glenn Close for The Wife, which frankly would have been a really sad and upsetting win in terms of it would have just been like the most blah win for an actress who has been great.
Yeah.
But it would have been like it was like her eighth nomination, so everyone thought she was going to win, and then she lost.
It would have been like a gimme.
Yes, it would have been a career achievement award, essentially. Yeah. But in a competitive category, and instead Olivia Colman wins, which I had no issues with, but Toni Collette should have still been our winner. If she had been nominated, she would have won, I think.
It's just such a good depiction of a mother grieving. And, like, the anger that she shows in this movie is palpable and, like, so real. Like, this inability to hold in those emotions and be able to co-regulate with her family. Like, she can't do it. Like, her husband is trying to, like, connect with her, and she can't connect because her emotions are just so big in her body. And she, like, personified that so well throughout the entire movie. Even when she's, like, excited about Charlie coming in, like, she's like, we're gonna do these seances, we're gonna do these seances, come on. It's like this, like, urgency, right? Like, I need to heal this wound. I need to, like, fix this. I can't live with this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's so perfect. Like,
It's just, frankly, it's just incredible stuff. Is there anybody else you want to bring up? Oh, Alex Wolff. We have to talk about him. So, Alex Wolff, who plays Peter the son, he also gives just what was, at the time, I mostly knew him from the Naked Brothers Band, like on Nickelodeon. Okay. Like, I did not really know much about Alex Wolff. He had been in a couple, like, teen drama comedies. But from what I understand, this is, like, his first big role that he took super seriously. He ended up doing a lot of effects practically. He would, like, when he slams his head into the desk, he does that.
What?
Like,
oh my god.
He also had to slam his head just right because of the blood packets to make his nose bleed.
Wow.
But if you notice, when he stands up, his knee is also randomly bleeding. It's because when he did it so hard that when he got up out of the chair, he actually scratched his knee, and that's real blood.
Wow. Wow, what an awesome shot.
Yeah, and according to Ari Aster, he had both him and Millie Shapiro go into Utah towns to just go do things as if they were brother and sister. And Millie Shapiro would just, like, not talk. And Alex Wolff was like, it was very frustrating. There was, like, actual resentment built between them.
Yeah.
And so, with, like, some of the interactions between them are honestly kind of real. And
yeah.
Alex Wolff also played it a little method, which, you know, say what you will, I don't love when actors go method, when they, like, commit so fully that they're like, oh, I'm not... The Jared Leto stuff is the worst one,
the
obviously.
Jared Leto stuff recent, like, what, poop to...
Yeah. Yeah, the Jared Leto stuff, if you want to look it up, go look it up. But it's horrific what he did on the Suicide Squad to his castmates. But in Alex Wolff's case, it's a little bit more forgivable. He's just like, I'm going to mostly isolate myself for 2 months. So I look alone, and I look sad, and I stay up late at night. And he says that it, like, psychologically affected him. That he had a lot of depression during filming the movie, and that he couldn't sleep. And so, like, again, you can read that on his face.
Jeez. Oh, yeah, you can. It's palpable. You can feel all – in this entire movie, you can feel all the emotions. Even – we haven't even mentioned the husband. You can feel this husband trying to grieve with his family and, like, trying to keep his family together. And it's, like, it's so painful to him to not only have lost his daughter, but watch him, like, lose his wife.
Yeah.
Like, lose his son.
Yeah, and,
like,
and
he's just so sad. He's trying to, like, keep it together, and he doesn't know what to do.
When Gabriel Byrne, who is an excellent actor, probably best known for The Usual Suspects and Miller's Crossing, when he's, like, the fifth best part of your movie, you know you're just, like, cooking with gas.
Oh,
right?
My God,
like yeah, he's very good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, the other person who we have to shout out is Anne Dowd. Who plays the lady who actually makes contact with Toni Collette in the second half of the movie and gets her to start going to group, and then...
Oh my gosh, there's so much to talk about!
Yeah, Anne Dowd would actually, like, later that year win an Emmy for her role on The Handmaid's Tale.
Wow.
Where she is also horrifying and scary.
She's just a creepy lady. Like...
Yeah, I mean, she's not, like, Anne Dowd had this, like, great career up to that point where she kept doing this, like, great character actress work, but nobody was recognizing her. She was in The Leftovers. She was in... Talk about depression. She was in the Handmaid's Tale. She's in True Detective. She was in this little movie called Compliance in 2012 that's really good. And she's very, very, very good in it. And so she gets approached to be in this movie. According to GQ, she was like, no, I'm not going to be in this movie. I saw The Exorcist when I was a child. I'm a Catholic woman. I'm not going to do this. And they pushed her to do it again, and she's like, okay, fine, I will do this movie. But she had to get a promise from Ari Aster that there would be, like, no bile coming out of her body, that she wouldn't be, like, some gross or possessed creature at the end of it. And even in the final scene of the movie,
you'll be the matriarch of the cult after the leader dies, you know?
And then even in the final scene of the movie with the payment stuff, she's, like, a devout Catholic, and so she was, like, in between takes, saying prayers to actual God to be like, I'm sorry, I'm doing this. This is just a job. Like...
Hell, payment! She's, like, leading the chant!
Yes, exactly.
I love it.
And then GQ did an interview with her as part of the press for The Handmaid's Tale when she was on her way up to win that award, and apparently somebody came up to them while they were doing the profile and was like, oh my God, are you in Hereditary? And she's like, yeah, do you like it? And she's like, oh my – the person's like, oh my God, I love it. And then she turns to the interviewer after the guy leaves, and she goes, I haven't watched it yet. It was like a year after the movie came out. And she's like,
what?
I can't watch my own movie because it's too scary. Like, it would be too scary.
Yeah, I was going to say, the last partner I had that I had them watch it, they were literally shaking after watching it. They're like, I can't talk about it. We're going to have to talk about it tomorrow. Because, like, I just can't talk about it. Like, they were, like, shaking. Visceral fear in their body.
Yeah. I mean, it's an upsetting movie. There's also apparently a 3-hour cut that exists to this movie. I like the idea of that more than I like the actual existence of it, if that makes sense.
Sure, have you seen it?
I've not seen the 3-hour cut. And from what I understand, Ari Aster does not think it's the best cut available. He thinks that like, it's basically just more texture within the family, more conversations, more discussions, but not necessarily scary parts. So, in an interview that I was listening to, that he straight up said, I think this is the best cut of the movie, the one that I released.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because that now makes 3 movies in a row that he's made a 3-hour movie and then cut it down.
Yeah. Wait, what's the third movie? What's his third movie?
So we were going to get there.
Okay.
We are getting an Ari Aster film in 2022. It's called Disappointment Boulevard.
Okay.
And it stars Joaquin Phoenix. It stars Amy Ryan, Nathan Lane, Patti LuPone, Michael Gandolfini, Parker Posey, and Zoe Lister-Jones. Now, from what
he's
hear...
He's, like, getting, like, real actors in his movies now. Like, I mean, not that, like, anyone else is, but, like, these are, like, stars, you know?
Yeah, they're real stars. I mean, at this point, he's a superstar, I think, director that people want to be involved with. It was supposed to... There were rumors it was going to premiere at Cannes. It did not. The rumor was that it's a three-hour-long comedy horror, which who knows what that means.
Right. I wonder what he... I mean, he's added a little bit more comedy each time.
I was going to say, like, Midsommar also has a three-hour cut. That one is available. You can buy the director's cut of...
I watched that in theaters. Yeah, I watched that in theaters, the three-hour... It was fine. I think it... Yeah, we'll talk about it when we talk about Midsommar.
Yeah, because I think that's... When we eventually get to Midsommar, I think we have to cover both versions. Is there anything else in particular you want to say about the movie? There's just, like, one small final touch that I want to touch on that I think is, like, a brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just love this idea of this fatalism versus free will. It's something that I think about pretty frequently, like, as a mental health clinician, when it comes to our instincts and our ability to, like, move through the world and generational trauma, and are we truly acting out of our own free will, or are we basing things based on our instincts? It's something I think about pretty frequently. Unless we're self-actualized, can we truly have free will, right? And the biggest thing is that this movie's so cool because she has these sleepwalking scenes. Toni Collette has these sleepwalking scenes where she, like, was trying to kill her son, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I never wanted to have you, right? And mm-hmm. I tried to, like, have a miscarriage. Nothing worked, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, why? Why do you hate me? And she's like, no, I love you. I love you. I was trying to save you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it lights on fire, and it's a dream sequence. But there's a part of her that recognizes this subconscious darkness
mm-hmm.
that's going on in the family. And she's trying to fight this, like, darkness in her subconscious, right? Like, that is so fucking cool. And if we move away from, like, the metaphor of the hereditary, you know, generational trauma, we move into, like, the demon literal things. Like, if demons exist in this world, there's a lightness in this world too, right? If there's that dualism in this world, like, something is trying to stop this demon from happening, right? Like, there's this other force that's trying to stop, and that force isn't truly benevolent either. Like, it's trying to kill a child through this woman's subconscious to try to, like, stop this. So this world is just so dark, right?
Yeah.
And then the other piece is just the funeral scene and the group therapy and realizing that everything led to this moment where they were summoning payment, right? You see the symbol, the cult symbol on the pole, right, where her head gets decapitated, right? There's, like, slid under the door. There's like, oh, we're doing seances, right? They try to get Toni Collette to go to these seances, and it didn't work. So the cult had to find another way, so they just happened to meet each other at the craft store, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And she brought her to the seance and talked about the seance. And, like, they just threw everything was so fatalistic. And this ritual was pushing them towards this end goal that sort of happened. And there was this force at certain points that tried to stop it from happening. The miscarriage, the killing of the child, right? It's just, there's so many layers to this movie. We could talk about it forever, so... But I think those are the pieces that really, like, that really stick with me and allow me to, like, talk about this movie and rewatch it and, like, want to show it to people because it's so human and deep. And, like, Ari Aster just did such a good job of adding so much passion from different layers, like the trauma and the grief and the magic and the ritual and, like, so many different layers to this movie. He's so passionate about so many things, and it just shows in this movie, you know?
100%. I mean, the fact that it has that many layers is why, again, it is so rewatchable. And why, at the end of the day, I think that it is one of the top 20 horror movies of all time. It is so interesting in how it just has this whole mythology, this whole world building set up on so many levels. They could make 100 sequels to this movie, and I hope they never do.
Don't touch it.
This is like the perfectly I think we will eventually get a Hereditary 2 in some way. Somebody's going to try to make it. But right now, we don't need it, and to even attempt to approach this property
don't do it. Leave it alone. All right, cool. What was the point that you wanted to bring up?
Oh, so the point that I want to bring up. So I had long struggled with the whole coughing bit that Millie Shapiro is doing, where we think she's having an allergic reaction to eating the nuts, eating the cake, right? What I realized is it has nothing to do with the cake itself. The cake itself is probably fine. The thing is that these are a bunch of teenagers, and when we enter the party, we see somebody chopping up walnuts.
Yeah.
And then they use the same knife to cut the cake. And it is as simple as cross-contamination.
Sure.
Something as simple as that is what causes the trauma that follows. I think that's incredible. I think that that in its own right is like a small but really incredible touch.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah, I love. Yeah, if you didn't add the that scene, it would have changed the entire movie. That's true.
Well, and I had wondered for a while, because later Alex Wolff starts coughing as well. I wondered if the coughing was more because the payment is entering your body versus having an allergic reaction. And again, the fact that this is all up for debate or can be read either direction says a lot. I also love all the random cult figures that are watching each of the children from like a ways away. Like both, like every time they show up, you're just like, wow, that's upsetting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's so many creepy moments in this movie that we could talk about, but we try to be concise on this podcast, and we're not doing that. But like,
Ryan, it's your favorite movie of all time. I think we can be a little like verbose.
I feel like the length is okay as long as we're on track, and I feel like we are gushing, and I think that's okay. Like.
All right, so before we jump into our personal awards, we do want to touch on one of the bigger awards bodies that we like to acknowledge when they are available, and that is the 2019 Fangoria Chainsaw Awards. Ryan and I were looking over the nominees for this over that year. Gotta say, this is like one of my favorite years of horror ever. It's also the year in which Mandy comes out, in which Halloween returns. I think Upgrade is a great movie that year, Quiet Place, Suspiria, The Ritual. Like, this is a loaded year. And Hereditary absolutely cleaned up. Toni Collette wins Best Actress, which is not a small feat considering that Jamie Lee Curtis was available. And Emily Blunt was also available in that actress pool.
Wow.
So, Best Director, Ari Aster. He takes that over Mandy's director and John Krasinski for A Quiet Place. It also got nominations. Oh, it also won Best Kill. It was the only nominee in the Best Kill section.
They were like, nothing else.
Nothing else. I also love the way they phrased it. They said, Charlie meets telephone pole. Like, it's like this like fun little like romance. Look at them. They're a little meet cute.
Charlie meets a telephone pole. They had that one. My Best Kill in that movie is where she is like slowly cutting her head off with the telephone wire.
Oh, then we're gonna have to get we're gonna have to have that discussion when we get to our personal awards. Okay. It also got nominated for Best Score. It won Best Screenplay. It won Best Wide Release. It won Alex Wolff Best Supporting Actor. Millie Shapiro loses Best Supporting Actress, but she loses it to Tilda Swinton, who plays like five characters in Suspiria. So I can't say I hate that. It cleans up. It wins so many awards. I would say this is the ultimate. I would have to go back and double check, but it seems like this has got to be maybe the most awards ever won by a film for the Chainsaw Awards. It's got to be close.
Go ahead.
All right, so let's go ahead and do our awards, and we're going to go ahead and lead off with Best Kill, because it seems like we have some debate here. So I am of the opinion that the Millie Shapiro hitting the telephone pole is the best kill in the movie.
I mean, for me, like, when it comes to kill, horror movie kill, like, that was the kill that changed the movie, but like Kill from like graphics and like what sticks in my mind and gives me that irky feeling. The point where you're just hearing like yank, 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 and then like he's getting like splattered with blood and he's looking up and his mother is like hanging in the air suspended, mm-hmm. like sawing her own head off
with piano
like, that
wire.
Terror, that yeah, with the piano wire. Like that terror is just so like palpable. Like that was so terrifying. Like I can't think of like anything that was like, because you are attached to these characters. Like this mm-hmm. isn't a slasher. Like you're attached to these characters.
I think that's so a
that
great
for
point.
Me. That for me was like montage scene. Like okay. That kill is so deep for me.
All right, so I will give it to you. I will okay. concede on this one. However, okay. we obviously have another award, the Norman Bates moment of the movie, that has yeah. to go to Charlie's head getting plucked off by a telephone pole.
Oh, yes. Yes. That is the moment that it changed the entire movie, for sure.
Yep. All right, our next award is the Marion Crane Gone Too Soon Award, named for the character that's disappearance from the movie maybe occurred too early in the film. We obviously love the scene in Psycho, but, you know, sometimes we want characters to make it a little bit longer. Is there a character that fits the description in this movie?
So we kind of were talking about them before the podcast, but, like, I think that, like, what I – if we were talking about – if there were to be a sequel, I want to learn more about this grandmother who caused her son to, like, starve themselves to death and – or commit suicide and a husband who, like, starved themselves to death. Like, who is this woman? What was this terror that she, like, invoked on this family, right? Like, mm-hmm. so grandmother, and then we talked about Charlie as well. What do you think?
You know, I like your idea of the grandmother for a bunch yeah. of reasons. If there sure. were to be, like, a prequel to this movie, that would be the way in which to see it. Kind of like yeah. how the movie X that's coming
X.
Has a prequel on the way. I think that yeah. that is the way to approach this. Because yeah. ultimately, there's not a character in this movie, like, because I think this movie is so immaculately constructed, I don't yeah. think anybody needs to last longer. There is a, no. the only other character that I can think of that maybe deserves a little bit more time is Gabriel Byrne, the dad. When he gets yeah. lit on fire, it's not even because of something he did. He's, like, just trying to help his wife and his son.
No.
And then she's like, she no, like, we're going to throw away this book, and she throws it away.
It's going to kill me.
she thinks it's going to kill her, and then boom,
yeah,
he lights on fire.
I feel so bad for him. He's just like, dude, this is fucking crazy. Whatever, I'll throw it in there. And then all of a sudden, but that's like, honestly, it never became real for him until he died, right?
Yep.
He's like, this is all crazy. You're going crazy. If I have to throw this book in the fire, it's going to be over. And like, he throws it in and he catches on fire.
Remember, he doesn't even throw it in. He thinks that she's so yeah. mentally broken that.
Oh, yes. He's like, I'm not engaging in this insanity. Like,
yes.
That's right.
So she's the one who throws it in.
Right. She throws it in ready for him to, like, be, you know, for her to be killed, right?
Yep, and
then he lights on fire.
Yeah.
Right. And then, oh, God, so many layers. In that moment, she, like, broke. And that's when, like, the demon or whatever possessed her.
Yep.
Because that was when she was finally broken from all the trauma. Like,
mm-hmm. Yep, that's when we get the little light shot, which, by the way, is a very cool special effect. I think that your answer is still the right one. I would like to see more time with the grandmother. I think it would be an interesting story. But in the context of this movie, I think it goes to the dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Because ultimately, he doesn't do anything wrong. He's, like, married the wrong woman.
No. Yeah.
Like, he did not know he was marrying into a cult family.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that.
All right. The Tom Savini best effect of the movie. Do you have anything that jumps out to you?
The crazy thing is it has nothing to do with kills, but just that, like, mm-hmm. that, like, the cinematography of, like, mm-hmm. you're in a dollhouse, you're being controlled. Like, this whole situation is, like, you know, fatalistic. Like, that cinematography, for me, kind of stands out. What about you? What do you think?
I think the sequence that I personally am never able to get past is
sure.
when I see Toni Collette's body floating through the sky.
Oh, yeah.
After she that takes her cool. head off.
Yeah.
That, or the effect of her crawling on the ceiling.
Oh, yeah. Those are both super fucking creepy.
There's not a lot of effects in this movie. We did mention the little, like, demon light.
And the demon light.
But I do ultimately think that a lot of the best stuff happens in the last 10 minutes of the movie in terms of effects.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, pretty much the whole movie is about family and grief, and in the last 10 minutes, it's like, nope, this is fucking demons. Like... Yeah, what do you think? What do you think? Where should we go with that award?
I'm going to go ahead and stake my claim that it's got to be the wire work in the last 10 minutes with Toni Collette.
Wait, that was wire work?
Yes, it was wire work.
Oh, shit. That's awesome. I thought that was CGI. That's amazing.
Nope.
I like, okay, that's easy.
All right. Next one up is going to be the Steve Hadley Biggest Regret Award. I think we kind of have already landed on somebody for this, but do you have one?
I think to not be just the dad, I think that the son, that's a huge regret, right? Like, yeah. Getting high and taking and decapitating his sister, right? But I think the dad has to win this one. He just, wrong family, man.
Like, yeah, you can imagine there's like an entire other life that he like never has to worry about. This.
He's just a boring dad reading like newspapers.
Yep. All right, so yeah it, easy call there. The Kurt Vonn most overconfident. Is our character the most overconfident in this movie? I don't really think so.
No, I think everyone's like broken.
Yeah.
I would say probably. I mean, the cult is extremely confident, but they got their goal, so overconfident? I don't think so. But I think Toni Collette, I think, is the only one that, like, comes close here. The mother, like, is like, no, if you do this, we'll be able to talk to Charlie, and, like, well, everything will be fine, and we'll be able to heal, and I'll be able to move on. And I think that she might be the only one that her overconfidence or her need to not be able to move on really is the winner here. But I don't know. Do you have anyone else that you can think of?
So... You kind of spoke to something. I do not think there's the most overconfident person in this movie. I think maybe there's the most overconfident moment where Toni Collette, when she goes home and she's like ready to do the seance with the dad and the son to say Charlie's here, and then they do the seance and that's like they've finally let payment inside the house essentially.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe it's an overconfident moment, but then she immediately realizes what she did is wrong and that the whole thing is unraveling even faster than she realized.
Right. No, absolutely.
And to go back to your point about the cult, they're not overconfident because, one, they succeed.
Yeah.
Two, your point about they get exactly what they want. I love the end credits song, Both Sides Now. It's obviously the Joni Mitchell song. But the version that they're playing is, if you see it from the family's perspective, this is a horror movie. If you see it from the cult's perspective, this was definitely like a great time for them. They accomplished their goals.
The song, what's it called? I've been listening to the soundtrack. It's called Reborn.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this perfect song of like creepy and optimistic and hopeful and powerful. Mm-hmm. Like, so perfect. Yeah. So go ahead.
Let's go ahead and we'll give the Kurt Vonn. I just don't think there's one here. I think we're good. Yeah. All right. Sure. Mandy Award. Is this their peak? Let's run through the list of people in the movie. Ari Aster, I think we kind of have to say right now it is, right? Or would you say that there's an argument to be had that Midsommar is a higher peak?
No, I think he was riding on his coattails of Hereditary. I think Midsommar is a great movie. I love it. But Hereditary is absolutely his peak right now, for sure.
Millie Shapiro is too young. We're not even going to bring it up for her because she's been in like two movies.
Yeah.
Gabriel Byrne, the dad, plays Steve. I would say no. He's the lead of The Usual Suspects in the 90s, and that's like an iconic movie. Alex Wolff, at this point I would say yes, although I think he is very good in Pig last year.
Okay.
I think that we're still going to see Alex Wolff's best in the future, but at the moment...
Still, he's still young too. He might be his peak right now.
Ann Dowd, frankly, I don't know if this necessarily is her peak, but it is part of her peak. Like, she's been on the rise. When you start to look at her, like, last 5 years, she's in this, like, dominant stretch of being in The Leftovers, Hereditary, American Animals, Mass, winning Emmys for The Handmaid's Tale. Like, she's, like, kind of, like, just in a sustained peak, but this is, like, part of that peak.
Sure, yeah.
And then I think for a lot of the cast and crew at the moment, I think we're still in, yes, they are all kind of, this is the peak of the time, but we're still within 5 years of this movie occurring.
Right.
So
yeah, it's kind of super, it's almost like close to a New Blood.
It's close, but not quite.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And then last but not least, who won the movie?
Well, wait, are we going with Ari Aster for the peak?
Well, I would say, like, I think that it depends on the person. I would say for Ari Aster, yes, it is his peak right now. And right. Then I would also say it's Toni Collette's peak as well. Getting that much acclaim, I think getting that much acclaim for this movie is ultimately something that is going to sustain her career for the next 10 years. I think that she is already one of the great actresses of all time. She won Emmys for United States of Terra. She's been nominated for Oscars before. Something we didn't bring up is that this is kind of like a weird spiritual sequel to The Sixth Sense. Where, as the mom in The Sixth Sense, her son sees ghosts. Yeah. And in this movie, she's the mother of children who are getting possessed by demons. It's, like, kind of weird.
Wow, interesting.
But another at the same time... but at the same time, I think that this brought so much acclaim and put her so firmly in the spotlight that I think this is, like... At bare minimum, it's a soft peak. I don't know if necessarily... People would say this is the movie that – I don't know. I think that when she goes into the Actors Hall of Fame, if there was one, that it's going to be her face screaming, I am your mother.
Oh, right.
Like, that is like the clip.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for this one I'm going to stick with Ari Aster, though, for right now. He's still young in his – everyone is still young in their career right now because this movie is like – amazing. But I think for right now, Ari Aster, I think, wins that award.
I think that's fair. And then I would like to give, like, the soft shout-out to Toni Collette is at her absolute, like, powerful, like, most powerful at this moment. And she's still popping up in movies, obviously, every year now. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, she's also great about a boy. She's such a good actress. I'm just happy that people, like, are acknowledging that. As right now, she's currently, like, probably nominated for an Emmy for The Staircase again.
Wow, awesome. How could she peak if she's winning, like, real awards?
Here's the thing. She should have won an Oscar for this. It's just, like, I mean, like, again, she won so many awards. It just so happened that the Oscars were the one group that were like, we'll pass.
Okay. All right, pass us on, dude. Where are we going?
All right, so we're down to who won the movie.
Ari Aster.
Yeah, I think that Ari Aster, you know, I have trouble saying it's him over Toni Collette, but it is true that this is the thing that will write his checks for the next 5-6 movies he wants to make, is that Hereditary was such a big hit. Here's the other thing, is it is also the highest grossing movie, or was the highest grossing movie for A24 ever.
Wow.
Until a few weeks ago. Unlike Lady Bird, where they had to split the worldwide gross, and Lady Bird did not make as much money as Hereditary. Wow. They just got passed by Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is my favorite movie of 2022.
That movie, but that movie's fantastic. So.
Yes, but in fairness, Hereditary has made more money overseas than any A24 movie at 37 million.
Everything All at Once?
Yeah, Everything Everywhere All at Once has only made 19 million overseas.
Because you think with the Chinese market, like, that would be huge.
Yeah, I would think it's possible it hasn't released in Asian countries yet. That might be the problem. Okay. Also, they have their own movies. Yeah. And China specifically has, like, rules on how many American titles they'll play a year. And I'm assuming those are getting bought up by blockbusters. Like, spots. True. So, But Hereditary did play overseas extremely well. Yeah, the most by – I mean, it passed Moonlight by like $30,000 overseas.
Wow. And, gosh.
But it made significantly more than Moonlight in America.
Yeah. Mhm. Awesome.
All right.
Yeah, so Ari Aster. Yep.
And that is all we have today for Hereditary. We may do another podcast down the road about it again because we love it so much. Just more gushing. We'll just, like, talk about it for, like, an hour. Just be like, we'll do a commentary. We'll do, like, a live watch-along.
Yeah. Oh, live watch would be so fun. Oh, my God, I'd love that.
All right. If you guys want to hit us up, you can hit us up at webottomlogmedia@gmail.com. You can get me at @TheAlanFrench on Twitter and on Letterboxd. Ryan, what are your Twitter handles?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is Keep It Spooky. I want to make sure I get it right. 09 on Twitter, so you can hit me up there. I'm not super active, but I try to be. So.
Yeah. And you can also hit us up at Bela Lugosi Pod on Twitter as well. If you guys have any other questions for us, we'd love to hear them. If you guys have any movie recommendations, we want to serve every master we can. We want to hear what you guys want to see. So hit us up. And with that, absolutely. I'm AJ.
And I'm Ryan. Keep it spooky. Bye.